I hope everyone had a productive Rosh Hashanah, a Rosh Hashanah of growth, a Rosh Hashanah of more focused davening, and a Rosh Hashanah hopefully of more focused thought and self-reflection. Now after Rosh Hashanah, here we are already at Tzom. And what are we fasting about exactly? Tzom Gedalia. Why exactly are we fasting? What's this all about? The Gemara Rosh Hashanah tells us, it's right in front of you, Gemara Rosh Hashanah Yudches Amud Beis is the sugya of the four tanios of the Churban. The Gemara roots them in a pasuk in Zechariah. The Navi Zechariah is having a conversation with the Jew. Navi Zechariah lives at the time of the return to Eretz Yisrael to rebuild the sect, to rebuild the Beis HaMikdash. This is the beginning of the period of the Bais Sheni, post Galus Bavel. And the Jews are asking him, this is approximately 70 years after the destruction of the first Beis HaMikdash. After approximately 70 years later, the Jews are coming back, and they turn to Zechariah and they say, are we still supposed to fast? And they mention, they list four fasts they had kept during the time of Churban that we keep as well. Tzom HaRevi'i v'Tzom HaChamishi, the fast of the fourth, the fast of the fifth. Tzom HaShavi'i, the fast of the seventh, v'Tzom HaAsiri, and the fast of the tenth. The fourth, the fifth, the seventh, the tenth. What? What are we counting? Months, exactly. The fourth month is Tammuz, the fifth is Av. The seventh month is Tishrei, and the tenth is Teves. So we're talking about Asar B'Teves, we're talking about Shivasar B'Tammuz, we're talking about Tisha B'Av, and we're talking about Tzom HaShavi'i, the fast of the seventh of Tishrei, not talking about Yom Kippur. That has nothing to do with Churban. It's a pasuk in the Chumash. Of course, Jews are going to fast Yom Kippur in every era. But the question was, today, Tzom Gedaliah. And the Gemara Rosh Hashanah begins to unpack, identify, as we just did, that those four names refer to those four tanios. And the Gemara begins to dig, what are these tanios about? So let's zero in, the Gemara Makom is in front of you, on today. Rosh Hashanah Yudches Tamid Beis, Tzom HaShavi'i Zeh Gimel B'Tishrei. Today, the third day of the month of Tishrei, Shebo Neherag Gedaliah Ben Achikam. Today is the day that Gedaliah ben Achikam was assassinated. Who assassinated Gedaliah? Miharago, Yishmael ben Nesanya harago. Okay, again, a little bit of information. There was that's a Jewish name. And nowadays we don't associate Yishmael with being a Jewish name, but during the days of the Tanoim it was. The Tana Rabbi Yishmael, a contemporary of Rabbi Akiva, and that dates back to the period of the Tanakh. Yishmael ben Nesanya, the Jew, assassinated Gedaliah ben Achikam, the Jew. L'lamedcha sheshkula mi'isasan shel tzadikin kesreifas beis elokeinu. And that teaches you that the death of a tzadik is as weighty as the destruction of Beis HaMikdash. What's that last line about? What unspoken question is that line addressing? What obvious question would be... Right. Well, perhaps. Why is this call for a fast? It's a personal tragedy. Rachman, it's not a personal tragedy that needs to be addressed. But it seems incommensurate that Kalal Yisrael will fast for generations because of the death of Gedaliah ben Achikam. So the Gemara. Well, what was the Gemara's answer? Why? Because the death of. Right. What kasha does that raise?
Isn't it that, like, after that,
the Jews... What was that? Right. Gedaliah is not the only tzaddik to have died. So if our question was, why does Gedaliah's death uniquely call for its own... Gavriel? No.
Akiva.
Akiva. Boyarsky. Yeah. Okay. So Akiva says, well, one second. I apologize in advance, as I told you the other day. I'm bad with names. I need a lot of chazar. Well, after chazar, Rachel will get it done. If I ask again, it's because I care. So Akiva says, the Gemara hasn't answered, it's a good kasha, but we didn't really seem to solve it. If the kasha is, why are we uniquely fasting because of the death of Gedaliah? He said, well, because Gedaliah was a tzaddik. Baruch Hashem, lo alman Yisrael, Kalei Yisrael has had far more than one tzaddik in our history. So, some skip tachnun on the day that a tzaddik dies, and Shulchan Aruch does not indicate that way, but either way, no one fasts on every single yahrzeit of a tzaddik. You would be fasting every day. So something, the Gemara is clearly raising the issue that the death of Gedaliah was somehow significant. And Kisrefa's Beis Elokeinu, equivalent to the destruction based on Mikdash. Why, by the way, does the Gemara speak about that? Destruction based on Mikdash, because what do we know about the destruction based on Mikdash in the context of the Sugya? Right, exactly. And we're talking about Tanios on the Churban. So you have Tisha B'Av, Mamash Shreifas Beis Elokeinu, as well as Shivas Shabbatamos, the step before when the enemy armies penetrated the walls of Yerushalayim, and the stage before that, Asar B'Teves, when the enemy armies several years earlier laid siege to Yerushalayim. So those three are all clearly the stages of Shreifas Beis Elokeinu. The odd man out, so to speak, it's some Gedaliah. So the Gemara says, well, Shkula meets the Sadiqim, Kesheva's Beis Elokeinu. But of course, we're still left wondering. Now the Rambam begins to give us a little bit of an insight in Hilchas Tanyos, where he quotes this Gemara, and then we'll look back to the beginning of Hilchas Tanyos, which is going to help but also raise a larger question and make this more practical. Yeah?
Aside from like the answer that's usually given, which I think is the Rambam's, can't it also be because he was assassinated by a Jew? Like, I know one answer is like, well, that was sort of the last chance we had before we went into Gaulus to be under sovereignty, but is there other times when someone was publicly assassinated by a Jew? Or could that also be a reason?
So you're raising two good points. Number one, you're pointing out, and number two, you're pointing out. Number one, you're pointing out, if you take a look at the Rambam Hilchas Tanyos in Perek Hay, the fifth Perek of Hilchas Tanyos, where the Rambam turns his attention to the types of fasts that we tend to think about. The annual fasts about the Churban, these four, to which Zechariah refers, to which the Gemara Rosh Hashanah refers, to the Rambam quotes the Gemara Rosh Hashanah in Hilchas Tanyos Perek Hay, Yom Shlishi B'Tishrei Shbo Ner Gedaliah Ben Achikam, as you said, V'nichbeis Gacheles Yisrael. The coals were extinguished. How many people here have ever tried to make a campfire? A bonfire, a campfire. Okay. How many people here have ever succeeded in getting going? Okay, it's pretty good. I'm impressed. Okay, we have some good skill sets here. That's good to know for the future. So, but you know, on the other end, part of it is knowing your tinder kindling and fuel, whether you learned it from a Boy Scout, you learned it from the sixth parak of Bava Kama, you know how to get a fire going. The other end is to know how to get the fire out. And sometimes, you know, to the untrained eye, well, you know, it looks like it's out. But there are still coals there. If you don't put it out well, thoroughly, there may still be hot coals that don't look very impressive, but are plenty hot, and if they get rolled over, they could restart the fire. So from a safety perspective, you got to make sure everything's really out. So that's the imagery that the Rambam is using, the metaphor they're using, that it was like the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, but there was still a glowing ember. Things could have started again. The fire could have started again. And with the death of Gedaliah, it was all over. The Sea Bivul Hasem Golusan, that drove us deeper into Golus. So it gets us thinking. Okay, the Rambam is giving us something more to chew on. Of course, if you don't know much about the story of Gedaliah, we're not really sure. There are bits and pieces here. But then the second problem is that this is the fifth parak of the Rambam's Hilchas Tanyos. Why is he starting? Well, what happened to the first four problems? The fifth parak, he starts the list of Tisha B'Av, Asar B'Gedaliah, Asar B'Teves, Shivas B'Talmud. What happened to the first four parakim? The answer is right. The first four parakim, he talks about the mitzvah d'oraisa of a special type of davening at the Eis Tzara. The Rambam in Hilchas Tefillah counts what he holds to be a mitzvah d'oraisa to daven daily. Three times a day is Rabbanan, but according to the Rambam, not everyone agrees, but according to the Rambam, daily davening is a chiyuv d'oraisa. Everyone agrees that davening is meaningful in the Torah. The Rambam holds it's not only meaningful every day, the Rambam holds it's obligatory every day. It's a chiyuv tefillah min haTorah b'chol yom. That's in Hilchas Tefillah. But then in Hilchas Tanyos, the Rambam says there's another mitzvah of davening, not based on the avda b'chol davachim, the Chumash Devarim, but based on the Pesukim in Parashas Bahaloscha, where the Torah says that when there's a time of Tzara, Al HaTzara Tzareresem, there's war, there's some other crisis in Eretz Yisrael, the Hariosim HaChatzotros, get out your Chatzotros and blow the Chatzotros, Chatzotos are used in many different ways, but one of the moods of Chatzotos, of the trumpets, is Ze'aka, is a cry to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And the Rambam counts these as two separate mitzvahs of tefillah. There's a daily mitzvah of tefillah, and then there's then Be'ez Tzara, at a time of crisis, there's a mitzvah of Ze'aka, to cry out to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, perhaps more in an Avinu Malkeinu type of mode than in a Shmona Esrei type of mode. The Psukim talk about Chatzotros, but the Rambam understands the Chatzotros are one aspect of tefillah. There's Ze'aki, cry to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. There's also Chatzotros, and he says, here you take a look, beginning of Hilchos Tanyos, mitzvahs aseim in HaTorah lizokol oriyah b'chatzotros. I'll call Tzara Shetava Atibur, to cry to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and that verbal tefillah is enhanced. It's accentuated, it's emphasized by the addition of blowing Chatzotros. And he goes on to say that fasting can also be a part of that. If you've learned Masechus Tanis, you know that the majority of Masechus Tanis is about this topic. The end of time, very end of Masechus Tanis, Mishnahis talk about Shivas Batamas and Tisha B'Av and so forth, but the bulk of Masechus Tanis is about this. There's no rain in Eretz Yisrael or some other tsar, there's some sort of plague, or there's an infestation of insects, of arba, of grasshoppers that could destroy the crop, and so on and so forth. Whatever it is, war, there's a tzara, so you daven, you blow chatzotros, and you fast. So that's how the Rambam opens Hilchos Tanis. The first four prakim are about tefillah, za'aka, and tanis be'es tzara. In that context, he says the following. He says, to fast, let's understand what we do when we fast, like today. If the response to crisis includes tefillah, includes teruah, that reinforces our awareness that there's a spiritual causality, a spiritual cause and effect, and part of a Jew's response to tzara needs to be tshuva. It needs to be to look in the mirror and ask, how can I improve myself? It does not mean that I can necessarily, connect the dots and say this tzara happened because of this avera. If you were a navi, HaKadosh Baruch Hu might give you nevuah and tell you this tzara is because of that avera. Yeah, Klal Yisrael has not been zochet to Nevi'im in over 2,500 years. So we're not able to connect the points with any type of certainty, but we do know that part of our response to Tzara is to do tshuva on our end. And he says, if you're not going to, you're going to say just minhag ha'olam, if you're just going to chalk up Tzaras that come our way to random chance, it's just stochastic. It means nothing, no response necessary. He says, fascinating. He doesn't say it's a chisar in emuna. He says it's a chisar in your midos. He says it's cruel. It's insensitive. Hayrezu derech achzorius. Garam eslam li dabek ma'aseh meran. I lack sensitivity if I can't pivot. If I can't react to tzara by saying, maybe I need to look in the mirror and figure out what I need, how I can improve. So the question is, Tzom Gedalia, number one, we're curious what Tzom Gedalia all about, and it's also a practical question of what are we supposed to be doing exactly in Tzom Gedalia? What's the focus supposed to be? So we'll have a morning seder to learn, and an afternoon to think about what. What I'd like to do very briefly is for the next 5 minutes or so, maybe seven, sketch, learn a little bit, open a Sefer Yirmiyahu together, and actually learn the story of Gedalia. In other years, we spent a lot of time on there's several prakim, there's so much richness. Given the way our schedule works out this year, I do not want this to take up the bulk of our morning. We're going to head down to the Beis HaMedrash relatively soon. But I think it's important, as a growing, maturing Avdei Hashem, to spend a few minutes preparing to appreciate today what it is and where it can take us. In order to do that, we're going to, as a chevra now, learn a little bit of Sefer Yirmiyahu for a couple of minutes, and we'll see where it takes us. We'll see some we see a fascinating and tragic story of Gedaliah. We'll come to appreciate a little bit more what the Tanis is about. We'll see a duality, a pair of themes that a pair of Gemaras set up. It begins to give us what to think about in terms of our own growth, particularly today. If this whets your appetite to, over the course of the afternoon, open a Sefer Yirmiyahu and learn some more, Matov Manan. So let's dive in. The story of Gedaliah is primarily the 40th and 41st prakim of Yirmiyahu, as you see right here. Just to contextualize things a drop, this story is happening a little bit less than 1,000 years after Mamre Har Sinai. Klal Yisrael spent the Yitzias Mitzrayim, Mamre Har Sinai. Klal Yisrael spent 40 years in the Midbar. Moshe Rabbeinu passes away on the east bank of the Yarden, as you know. Then Yoshua, Nevi'im opens with after the death of Moshe Rabbeinu, Yoshua leads Klal Yisrael across the Yarden to the west bank, to Eretz Yisrael proper. And over the next couple of centuries, there's a gradual process of conquering Eretz Yisrael, but Klal Yisrael, for the next couple of centuries, Klal Yisrael are living in Eretz Yisrael, and they're spread out according to their Shvatim, but they're not organized as a single country. That's what you see. You already see hints to it in Sefer Yehoshua, and it becomes very clear in Sefer Shoftim that the Shvatim seem to be operating in many ways independently. Lahavdil, almost... it's almost like Articles of Confederation as opposed to the United States. The Shvatim were a loose confederation. They were not operating as a single country. That changes in Sefer Shmuel. Shaul, the first king of Klal Yisrael, begins to pull the Shvatim together. And David HaMelech fully, and that's what the Navi had predicted in advance, David HaMelech has a united kingdom. All the 12 Shvatim are united under the reign of David HaMelech and under the reign of his son, Shlomo. The Navi tells Shlomo that because of his chataim, we spoke with a little bit on Thursday from a different angle, the Navi tells Shlomo that because of his chataim, that united kingdom is not going to persist. His son, Rechavam, will be king only over the southern kingdom, Malchus Yehuda, which was mostly Shevet Yehuda, some Binyamin, some Shevet Levi, whereas most of the other Shvatim, the Aseres HaShvatim, the other 10 Shvatim, will be a separate country, Malchus Yisrael, the northern kingdom, under a separate king. And that persists for centuries. Sefer Melachim takes you back and forth between the Melch Yehud and the Melch Yisrael, and the next Melch Yehud, the next Melch Yisrael, and back and forth, and back and forth, and back and forth, until after a couple of centuries, Malchus Yisrael, the northern kingdom, is no longer. There's a rising superpower whom we recognize from Yonah, if nowhere else, and that is the Assyrian Empire, Ashur, headquartered in their capital city of Nineveh. And Ashur becomes a very significant player in the Middle East, becomes a dominant power in the Middle East, conquers many countries, including Malchus Yisrael. Sennacherib is the emperor that finally totally destroys Malchus Yisrael. Assyria practiced mass migration. That's how they... It's been a problem throughout the centuries, throughout the millennia, how to maintain a political science problem. How do you maintain control, hegemony over an empire? As your empire grows, it becomes harder and harder to keep control. But different emperors, different dictators over the centuries have different approaches. So Sennacherib's approach, by approach I don't mean anything positive. This was horrific, and he ruined millions of lives by doing this. His solution was mass migration. Was you conquer a country and then you move them to a different country and move somewhere another group into this country. So that way no one really feels at home, no one's in their ancestral land, so it keeps all of his subjects off kilter, and that's how Sennacherib did his thing. That's why the Aseres HaShvatim are gone. And the Kusim, the people from Kusa, were moved in to the northern kingdom. Sennacherib also attacks afterwards Malchus Yehuda, the southern kingdom, and destroys much of Malchus Yehuda. But the Navi Yeshaya tells Chizkiyahu HaMelech, don't worry, Ribbono Shel Olam told me Yerushalayim will be safe, and indeed it is. Sennacherib does not succeed in penetrating Yerushalayim. There's fascinating, the Psukim talk about the Nisim that occurred at the gates of Yerushalayim, and there is fascinating external secondary I should say primary archaeological evidence that reflects those nisim that Sanherib did, because in the military annals that have been uncovered, the Assyrian military annals, he brags about how he conquered this country, that country, this country, that country, and he came to Eretz Yehuda, and he sacked all these cities, including Lachish, which was the second largest city at the time, and I laid siege to Yerushalayim, period. Only Jews were so honest as to record their own failings. So Melech Ashur didn't say, I didn't succeed in getting in, but if you know how to read between the lines, pretty clear. That's what Rabbi Yehuda Landi points out. So Eretz Yehuda survives, but it's diminished. Chizkiyahu is one of the great kings of one of the greatest tzaddikim of the Malchei Yehuda. A lot going on in Sefer Melachim, which we're going to elide over. But Chizkiyahu's son is Rasha, his grandson is Rasha, but his great grandson is a tzaddik. His great grandson is Yoshio HaMelech, the last true king of Eretz Yisrael. The last true king from Malchus Beis David of Eretz Yisrael. Beis Hamikdash is not destroyed in his time, but Yoshio HaMelech is the last one who is a really free and sovereign king. There already are other superpowers vying for control of the Middle East. Mitzrayim, Egypt is up and coming. Bavel is up and coming. Ashur has not yet given up. You've heard the story of the course of Tisha B'Av probably about how Yoshio is killed at Megiddo when he faces off against the power Necho, who is coming north along the coast to fight at Carchemish. And after the death of Yoshio, it's never the same again. Yoshio's descendants are the remaining kings of Yehuda, but none of them is really in charge. They're all puppets of some empire or another, of Mitzrayim, of Ashur, of Babel. No one's really free. And by the end, Nebuchadnezzar, familiar name, the Babylonian emperor who ultimately destroys Beis HaMikdash, long before he destroys Beis HaMikdash, he's sort of shuffling through Yoshio's descendants. Now this one will be the king. Oh, you're not being loyal enough to me. Boom, you're out. Now I'll take you as the king. Oh, you're not being loyal enough to me. And so it goes. And finally, Paraglam Tesev Yirmiyahu tells about, at the end of Sefer Melachim, tell about the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash. Tzidkiyahu is the last king, last puppet king of for the Malchus Beis David. And Biyamav, Yechaniah had preceded him. You heard about Yechaniah in Megillas Esther, if nowhere else. It was a gulls at the time when Yechaniah is deposed. But Beis HaMikdash survives, much of the Jewish community survives. But then Nebuchadnezzar comes back and takes out Tzidkiyahu and destroys the Beis HaMikdash, sacks Yerushalayim totally. And then, they tell Yirmiyahu, the Babylonians tell Yirmiyahu Hanavi, but you can go back. You can go back if you want. We're not taking you prisoner. And we're leaving the Jewish community. The Beis HaMikdash is destroyed. Yerushalayim is destroyed. The vast majority of the Jews in Eretz Yisrael are sent into Galus, mostly to Babel. But Nebuchadnezzar decides to leave behind a small Jewish community, no longer centered in Yerushalayim, and no longer under the leadership of a descendant of David HaMelech. Under the leadership of a Jew, his name is Gedaliah. Here you have it. Perek Mem, Pasuk Hei. We are not going to read every Pasuk inside, unfortunately. Although, as I said before, I recommend you take some time later today to learn more thoroughly. They tell him, Shuva el Gedaliah ben Achikam ben Shaphan. They tell Yirmiyahu, go back to Gedaliah. Asher hifkid melech Bavel bar Yehuda. Melech Bavel, Nebuchadnezzar, has appointed him to be the provincial governor, not the king. He's not from Malchus Beis David. He's not a king. We're done with that, Melech Bavel says. But we'll have a province. He's overtly, merely a provincial governor working for Melech Bavel. The Shevito, and go back with him. You go back with him or live wherever you want to. The Bavlim give Yirmiyahu free reign. And he comes back. And he comes back in Pasuk Vav and in Pasuk Zayin. Vayishmu kol sarei ha-chayalim asher basadeh. There were military commanders in the fields. In other words, not all the Jews were in Yerushalayim. There were parts of the Jewish army that ended up outside, and they were still sort of acting as sort of partisans that had been fighting with the Bavlim, or had just been hiding in the forest and in the mountains to see what would be. They had survived the destruction because they weren't in Yerushalayim, and now they hear, Hifkid Melech Bavel, Gedaliah ben Achikam. they hear that there's amnesty, as it were. That now the war is over, and whoever is still here, the Melech Bava is allowing a small number of Jews to remain in peace in Mitzpah. If you know your Sefer Shmuel, Mitzpah has been an important place in the past. Now they're back in Mitzpah. Not in Yerushalayim, they're back in Mitzpah. And they begin to come. Pasuk Ches, Ve'avol Gedalia Mitzpasa, they come, there's already a community, men, women, and children, gather around Gedalia. Now the military begins to come back, the remnants of the military. Yishmael ben Asanya, Yochanan, Yonasan, both sons of Kereach, and more names. These are the names of the remaining surviving military commanders. Saraya and Yizanya. Vayishav alehem, and Pasuk says, Gedalia swears to them, Al tir mevod akastim, don't be scared of working for the custom. It's safe. It's safe. We have safe passage. We're allowed to live here. I'm here in Mitzpah, la'amod lefnei akastim. I'm going to represent you. I'm going to liaise to the custom, is another name for the Bavlim. He says, move back in. Begin to farm. Begin to harvest your grapes. We can settle down again. And people begin to come back. Even Jews who had run away to Moab and to Ammon, to other countries, what we would call nowadays southern Jordan, but now they hear that it's safe to come back. The destruction is over, and the Jews we're beginning to build a community again. And probably the end of Pasuk Mem is where things begin to hit the fan. Yochanan ben Kareach, the second name we had heard in the list of military commanders, as well as all the others. They all come. Yochanan Kareach, V'chol Sarei Chayalim. They all come to Gedalia, and they say in Pasuk Gedalia, Hayadoa Teida. He says, you need to know the following: that first military command you had met, Yishmael, he's going to double cross you. He's in the pay of the king of Moab. Baalis, the king of Ammon, also what we would call southern Jordan. He says, he doesn't want you to have any power. They want to take you out. They want to assassinate you. Because Ammon would not love nothing better than a vacuum in Eretz Yisrael, which they couldn't move into. You're in their way. And they hired Yishmael to kill you. Gedalia says it cannot be. Lohemin Lam Gedalia said, nah, a Jew wouldn't do that. And then Pasuk Tezvav, Yochem Mekerech Omer El Gedalio Beseser. Now the Malvin points out, this is the second conversation. Yochanan comes alone. The first time, in a delegation. And Gedalia ignored them. So Yochanan assumes, incorrectly, that Gedalia was being a statesman, Gedalia was being a diplomat. He wasn't going to say in public that I suspect Yishmael. So Yochanan comes back and he says, I understand. You want to have a public conversation, but I got you. He says, let me take care of business quietly. You don't have to have any fingerprints. I'll take care of myself. He won't wake up. You give me permission, and Yishmael won't wake up in the morning. I'll take care of it quietly. It'll never be traced back to you. He says, but he's a threat to you. He wants to kill you. Habar lahargo, hashkim lahargo. You need to self-defense. And Gedalia says no. Pasuk Perek Mem ends. Gedalia says, absolutely not. You're lying. It cannot be. And that's when it becomes clear to Yochanan that Gedalia wasn't trying to play it safe. He truly did not believe them, that Yishmael meant them harm. Yishmael shows up at the beginning of Perek Mem Aleph. Vehi b'chodesh hashvi. Machlokas Rishon, whether this is a reference to Rosh Hashanah or the third of Tishrei. It's likely it was Rosh Hashanah. That's the indication in Chazal that way. Yishmael comes to Gedalia for Rosh Hashanah Suda. Yochu sham lechem yachtav ba mitzvah. And then he turns around and kills him in cold blood. He has shown up with 10 other people, and he assassinates him. He executes him on the spot. Yochanan was right that Yishmael wanted to assassinate Gedalia. Yochanan was right that there was money involved. Baalis, the king of Ammon, wanted this, but the Malvin points out, and the Rishonim point out, that Baalis was apparently very, very attuned, and he knew whom to ask. Because how is Yishmael described here? Yishmael ben Asanya ben Elishama mizera hamelucha. We get the full name. He's not just Yishmael ben Netanya. We get the whole Yichus, and we hear that he's Mizera HaMelucha. He's from royal stock. Why is the Pasuk telling me this? Only when we watch Yishmael show up to assassinate Gedaliah. Why all of a sudden all the Yichus? What's
he
saying? Right. This was Yishmael's angle. Baalissa's angle, Melech Hamon's angle, was he wanted to take Eretz Yisrael, take Eretz Yehuda. But Yishmael was ripe for the picking. Yishmael was an easy person to buy in this way, because Yishmael had his own angle. Because Yishmael was jealous. Yishmael was resentful. Because Yishmael felt entitled. I should be the king. If there's no longer a Tzidkiyo, I'm next in line. I'm Mizera HaMelucha. Who is this upstart? Gedaliah ben Achikam, he doesn't belong. And he shows up with his whole retinue. Rabbei HaMelech. Asar HaNashim Ito. He shows up with all royal retinue. I'm the guy. I should be king. And that's what was driving him. And then it goes from bad, from terrible to even more terrible. Because Yishmael not only assassinates Gedaliah, but in Pasuk Beis, in Pasuk Gimel, he assassinates all the other Jews who are in Mitzvah. All the Jews and all the Bavlim, the Jews, the non-Jews, he wipes out the town. And then it gets even worse. Because Pasuk Da says no one knew he wanted to hide his crime. So he massacred the entire town. No one could leave the town and spread the news that there was a murderous assassin, because Mitzvah was wiped out. Pasuk Hey, more Jews begin to come. Jews who had heard about the Churban, they were there. They had left their town. Such a terrible sight. They have torn clothing and they're holding a carbon, because they left their town thinking there was still a Beis Hamikdash, thinking they would bring a carbon. On the way, they heard about Churban Habayis. Now they're showing up with torn clothing, they still have the flour for the carbon mincha to figure out what they're going to do with it, and they think they're coming to the Jewish community in Mitzvah, and they walk into a trap. Yishmael, on the second page, Pasuk Vav, Yishmael comes out, he says, oh, come on in, come see Gedaliah. What a cynical, evil person. Come see Gedaliah, and they walk, mamish walk into a trap. The moment they walk into Mitzvah, they're all slaughtered. Rechmana litzlan. Terrible, terrible, terrible. And he has the psukim describe the mass grave in Pasuk Tes. That Yishmael throws all the body, tosses all the bodies. Horrific. And then, there's the tzara itself, the horrible murders. There's also the aftermath. Because in the second half of Perek Memal, Yochanan hears about it. Starting in Pasuk Yudalf. Yochanan, and now he's like, this is exactly what I was worried about. His worst nightmare has come to pass. Exactly what he was worried about, that Yishmael would assassinate Gedaliah. No, he assassinated Gedaliah. He wiped out all of Mitzvah, wiped out hundreds and hundreds, killed hundreds and hundreds of people. And then they begin to debate what to do next. And there's a debate about whether they should stay, because now the problem is, what just happened? So we see as a personal tzara, and it is a personal tzara. How does it look from Bavel? If you're the emperor of Bavel, what did you just hear?
The Jews just destroyed
it. Right. The Jews killed my provincial governor. I gave them another chance, and there was an uprising, and they killed my representative. Gedaliah stood for, as he had said, I stand for the Emperor of Bavel. So that was it was an act of war also. In addition to a massive tragedy, it was an act of war against the Babylonian Empire. And led by whom? Led by the leading Jewish military leader, Yishmael. Now, from our perspective, we see a lot more nuance, a lot more detail. And all the other Jewish military leaders were against Yochanan and Yonatan, they were all against this. This wasn't an uprising of the Jewish people. This was one man whose jealousy and envy and greed for money led him to do horrific averis. But from the Bavel, from the perspective of Bavel, this is the Jews. The Jews have revolted against, I was kind enough to let some of them stay, and even appointed one of their own as a provincial governor, and they're Mishal Nimra, Tachas Tova. Who needs it? So the remaining Jews realize we're in big trouble. If we stay here, we're sitting ducks. We better get out of here. Melech Bavel is going to come now. He's going to wipe off anyone who remains. And the Navi Yirmiyahu tells them, no, stay. Yochanan's right, let's just run away to Mitzvah. Where are you going to run? You can run, but you can't hide. We can leave Eretz Yisrael to go where? The Babylonian Empire is vast. They say, let's go south to Mitzrayim. Mitzrayim was a different empire, independent of Babel. We'll run to Mitzrayim. We're blacklisted by Babel. We better get out of Babel's sphere of influence. Yirmiyahu says, I got a nevuah from HaKadosh Baruch Hu that you should stay, that despite what the way it looks, HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, you're not going to be destroyed if you stay. And they don't believe him. And they say to Yirmiyahu, you're also being paid off. Your Talmud Baruch has some political angle, and that's why you're trying to keep us here. We don't trust you either. Everything fell apart. So now you begin to see, it was the assassination of a tzaddik. It was the assassination of Gedaliah. And it was also all the destruction of that assassination. It was like pulling the, like knocking down the one domino and knocked down everything. It was a destruct, the physical, biological, the murder of a massacre of an entire community. And it was a destruction of the cohesion and the emuna of whoever survived. To the point where they no longer believed Yirmiyahu HaNavi. Where they thought that Yirmiyahu had been their source of strength, you must also really be a two-faced cynical, you're just out to get us. They lost their capacity to trust anyone. The whole Kehila was destroyed through the action of one man's kinah. Money and jealousy destroyed everything. And there's one other angle also. Because the Gemara Maseches Nida wonders, Gemara Maseches Nida, at the very end of the page, wonders about a pasuk that we had sort of slid over. Perek Mem Aleph Pasuk Tes, I mentioned that the psukim even describe the way Yishmael throws all the hundreds and hundreds of bodies into a mass grave. If you look at that pasuk for a moment, it's really bizarre. Habor Asher Hishlich Shem, again, the top of this, the second page, Perek Mem Aleph Pasuk Tes. Habor Asher Hishlich Shem Yishmael Es Kol Pigrei Hanashim. This is the pit where Yishmael had, it's hard to even say it, tossed all of the bodies of those people, the men, women, and children, Asher Hika Biyad Gedaliahu, who had been attacked at the hand of who? Gedaliah killed them? So the Gemara Maseches Nida says, Gedaliah didn't do any killing. Gedaliah was trying to help everyone. Gedaliah, as a matter of fact, was the first person to be killed. So he has, if you will, the ultimate alibi. Gedaliah didn't kill anybody. So what does this mean? Yeah? It could be. He could be Yad Gedaliah. Well, maybe they would be Liyad Gedaliah or Eitzel Gedaliah. But Hika Biyad sounds like they were killed at the hand of.
Guards up to save him in case they wouldn't have been killed. So it really was his fault.
Okay. Okay. Good. Good. Yeah.
Can't
Joey.
Can't Bezos also mean with? So like they're killed with Gedaliah?
Yeah. Although Biyad sounds like there's agency. Yeah. Maybe. Yeah.
Well, I think it's just saying that Gedaliah is partially at fault because even though he didn't physically do the act, he told Yochanan. Trusted, and therefore led to everything.
So the Gemara Nida, good. The Gemara Nida pulls together what the two of you are saying. The Gemara Nida Samach Alef Amar Alef. Habar Asher Shlich Sham Yishmael Kapirga Anashim V'chi Gedaliah Haragan Yishmael Haragan. Gedaliah didn't kill anybody. He was innocent. Yishmael was guilty. Ella says the Gemara what you said. Nitosh ayo lo lachush latzas Yochanan ben Kareach v'lo chash. He did the wrong thing. He was supposed. Yochanan comes and says, I have real reason to believe that someone wants to kill you. So how do you not pay attention to that? Ma'aleh alav atasim ki laharagan. He bears responsibility not only for his own death, but for the death of the hundreds of people to follow. Amar Rava Hailish Nabisha, Lashon Hara, Bish is Aramaic for Ra, Hailish Nabisha, this Lashon Hara, Afa Pidil Kabuli Lomi Boy, Mechash Lomi Boy. A Jew is not, you can't accept it, but you have to be concerned. Meaning, in simple language, if someone tells you Lashon Hara that has relevance to how you're going to future steps, so I can't assume that's definitely true, but I have to work on the, I have to consider the possibility that might be true. Sometimes people tell me Lashon Hara and it's true. Sometimes people tell me Lashon Hara and it's false. And often it's sort of a mix, and people have their own biases, but there often is an element of truth in what people are telling you. So if it doesn't really matter to your life, so then why are you getting involved? But if it's going to matter, if it's material, as it was here, so mechash mi bai. Gedai wasn't supposed to be convinced that clearly Yishmael is out to kill me. Who knows? You know, Yochanan may have his own angle also. Who knows what other sorts of rivalries there were on the fields of battle? You don't know, but you have to be cautious and consider the possibility that this is real and take precautions. It doesn't mean that necessarily Gedai should have actively gone out and killed Yishmael first. Figure that out. Was there enough evidence to indicate there or not? But at the very least, don't have a Rosh Hashanah Suda with Yishmael and 10 of his goons without any protection. And that's exactly what he did. And he bears liability for that. It's not okay to be overly trusting. If you have responsibility, you're responsible for a community, you have to take that responsibility seriously. It was irresponsible of Gedaliah to act this way, to throw caution to the winds. Yishmael is not absolved from being a murderer. Yishmael is an evil murderer. But at the same time that Yishmael is responsible for his actions, Gedaliah also bears a degree of culpability. So that's the story in brief. There's plenty more to dig into. But taking a step back, and just to think about, we begin to appreciate the complexity of the story that lies behind today's tzom. And as we were saying before, not only does it help us to understand, as you point out, the Rambam speaks to, it was the assassination of Gedaliah was also the destruction of any remaining community. Gachelas Yisrael, as he said, the last coal was put out, and now we see what that looked like. We see how it plays out in the Pesukim. It also gives us a sense of maybe where our Avodah should be pointed. Certainly, every Tzom is an opportunity to do Tshuva in general, to carve out some time for Cheshbon Nefesh, and everyone has his own Yitzrei Hara. What's easy for me is hard for you. What's easier for you is hard for me. Everyone has his own profile of which Yitzhar Hara are easier to overcome, which Yitzhar Hara are more difficult to overcome. And it changes from person to person. It changes from year to year. You find yourself in different situations. And as you mature also, certain things become easier and other things come to the fore. So it's always a good idea, Bechlal, and then certainly Shuv in particular, and all the more so on its own, to carve out 5, 10, 15, 20 minutes with a piece of paper and a pen. Yes, old school, because a piece of paper isn't going to all of a sudden start distracting you to something else you weren't planning to write about, usually, unless your paper is very energetic. So sometimes pen and paper is more helpful when you're trying to focus, sometimes. Whatever works best. Well, sit down, carve out some time to think about, you know, what are one or two or three things that I've been successful at lately, successes I should be proud of, and that I want to reinforce and throw myself into more? And what are one or two or three things, types of situations where I haven't handled them the way I know HaKadosh Baruch Hu would want me to? It may be relationships, people that I interact with that, you know, looking back, I could have handled that situation very differently than I did. Maybe it's a Yetzer Hara B'dam L'makom. It's a mitzvah not careful enough about. It's not there that I'm slipping into. Whatever it is. A tainus is a good opportunity for cheshbon nefesh in general. But there also is a unique flavor to each tainus. And presumably, exploring the stories of Gedaliah give us a sense of what are the particular chatoim and particular midos that we might want to particularly focus on for ourselves. Baruch Hashem, I assume no one here has any intention of becoming a hired hitman. No one here is interested in being an assassin. But the underlying midos that play themselves out in a particularly heinous way in this context can play themselves out in more mild ways in our lives also. And you think about on the one hand and on the other hand. You think about the Gemara, Rosh Hashanah Yud Ches, with the focus on Miharago Yishmael, versus the Gemara Nida that focuses on the Chet of Gedaliah. On the one hand, to think about Baruch Hashem, none of us are, I hope, tempted in the way that Yishmael was tempted to massacre people. But we probably are sometimes motivated to do far less dastardly things, but still inappropriate things because of envy, because of jealousy, because we think that I ought to have what he has, and I ought to have that position, I should have gotten that spot, I should have got fill in the blank. At this point in your life, it may have to do with the summer job that I was supposed to get that he got instead. There was a limited number of spots in the yeshiva, and I thought I was going to get one. Because he got, that's why I didn't get. And a couple of years from now, the graduate program I wanted to get into, I wanted to date that girl, and he got instead. I wanted that job, and he took it instead. V'chulu, v'chulu, v'chulu. So we believe that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is running the show. We believe that people get what they're supposed to get. And we could have both gotten the job, we could have neither gotten. I get what I get, he gets what he gets. And we believe that in our heads, but there's often a distance from the head to the kishkas. So to believe in your head is not the same as feeling in your gut. Jealousy is a real nisayon, and today is a day to work on jealousy. And today is also a day to work on responsibility. That's the chet of the more subtle chet of Gedaliah, who is a tzaddik, but at the same time a fatal flaw, figuratively and literally, the fatal flaw of being irresponsible, not recognizing that other people relied on him, and not recognizing there's a time to ignore Lashon Hara, and there's a time to handle Lashon Hara gingerly. So to be thoughtful about Shmiras HaLashon, and to be thoughtful about responsibility, and to be thoughtful about developing our capacity to be happy for someone else's success. All of those are particularly significant parts of the avoda of Tzom Gedaliah. Hopefully gets us started, and a week of remaining days, the Shivas Hayamim, as the opening Mishnah Yuma says, the final 7 days of preparation for Yom HaKippur, which will come next week. So these are important parts of our growth, important parts of developing ourselves, and Tzom Gedaliah is a particularly propitious day to work on these mitzvos.